we see our role in the ecosystem as continuing to, you know, be a one-stop shop for everything that relates to gender finance, whether it's the resources, the tools, knowledge products, providing that community and supporting people's connection and learning from each other, as well as collaboration, but then also to, you know, continue to help move the market and the field forward through these initiatives.
Welcome to Design Influence. I'm Isabel Swiderski. As March winds down, this month dedicated to celebrating women in some parts of the world, it seems fitting to take a clear-eyed look at where we sit. By all accounts, there are myriad initiatives and solutions deployed to carve out spaces and resources built by and for women to ensure greater equity, greater safety, more prosperity, and sustained well-being. Despite these efforts, or maybe because of them, there's little visible progress in valuing the work and worth of women in society more broadly. If money talks, then its meaning is clear, and gender lens investing specifically is having an identity crisis. Is it time to disrupt or to destroy, to bend or to break? I recently had the chance to sit down with Sana Kapadia, Director of Strategy at 2X Global. Sana has been immersed in the social impact space for some time, and her role at 2X is a continuation of her focus on accelerating social change through finance. 2X is a membership and field-building organization for investors, capital providers, and intermediaries working in public and private markets across both developed and emerging economies. Its multifaceted approach aims to walk the line between navigating the system and charting a new course.
We have three strategic pillars that guide our overall activities. And the first one starts with really building capacity. And what does it mean to fully equip and engage the full spectrum of investors, influencers, intermediaries towards deploying more capital with a gender lens? We have a series of thematic communities of practice, and these are these action-oriented, solution-focused working group sessions around themes like gender and climate finance, the care economy, justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, investment practitioners, as well as peer action groups. And these are meant to be smaller spaces that are, you know, for peers and provide that more ad hoc community-based feel to, let's have a discussion on what's happening around board diversity and leadership, like what's working for you as a fellow development finance institution. Then the second is around shifting standards. So on one side is thinking about, let's say, the bigger regulatory and disclosure shifts that are happening in the broader ESG space or sustainable investing, thinking about, you know, the new climate regulations that are coming out, the human rights regulations that are coming out in the EU. How can we make sure that gender is integrated in those discussions? So at like a broader systems level. And then we're constantly thinking about how to level up on the criteria, as well as a new pathway is around 2X certification and what might it mean to have broader standards, as well as a pathway to good, better, and best. So that comes under our sort of shifting standards pillar. And then on the other side, we have, you know, the shaping of the markets. So here, for instance, we have this multi-pronged initiative called 2X Ignite, which on the one side, yes, has capacity building for a global fund manager community, as well as a GP sprint that we've just piloted in Africa. And then there's going to be a investment facility as well to provide warehousing capital to help diverse and first-time fund managers get out of the gates.
How did you get started in this space?
Yeah, so in my particular journey, I would say that I've always been in the finance industry and started in more commercial mainstream on the equity side of things. And fairly early on though in my career, I made a shift leveraging a master's degree in development economics to pave my transition to the field of impact investing, which was underway and starting to sort of gain more traction. And always knew that there is a role for finance as a tool for social change. And that looks different depending on the type of investor that you are, your thesis, your setup, the asset class that you're in. And so I've spent the last, almost 10 years now working along that intersection of impact and investing, and whether it's been on the venture capital side or helping to sort of really grow the social entrepreneurship ecosystem in Canada and outside. And then more recently has been very focused on thinking through this with a gender lens, and whether that was through co-founding and building the Raise Collective, which was aimed at sort of building a community of female investors, to the work that I do now, which is at a field building level, really thinking through, well, what are the ways for us to really galvanize more actors in the investment space to be deploying capital with a gender lens and then supporting, their individual and organizational journey. So I think that the numbers, as you said, Isabel, speak for themselves. We definitely need more capital allocated towards women and diverse founders, fund managers, entrepreneurs. And I think an ecosystem approach helps also to sort of see where the linkages are with different organizations. And my particular work continues to be quite global. So it's both emerging and developed markets. It's private markets and public markets, because I think that, given finance is a spectrum and there's different asset classes and people who are, let's say, on the philanthropy side all the way to more commercial, there is a way to integrate gender across the spectrum. And my commitment is to sort of making sure that we are doing that in the way that makes sense for the context that we're in, because we need those numbers to shift. We shouldn't be having the same conversation in 10 years that the volume of capital is 2% for women in VC and less than 1% or 0.1%, I should say, for women of color. Like we just can't keep having the same conversation.
But we are, right? We are. And I think there's a huge level of frustration. And so is the question now, do you keep working within the system and try to, come hell or high water, change it? Or do you reinvent it? And it's probably not an either or, yeah. But how are you feeling having been in this space for a while and seeing that we are, in fact, constantly having the same conversations? And is it also just a failure of leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point that it's not an or, but an and there is a place for full disruption, and there's a place for being within and sort of disrupting from the inside out. Each of us also has individual strengths, but as a collective, we're stronger. And so I think we need those different strategies to have sort of real sustained change. I think the barrier that I keep coming up, to is also that, especially in the gender space, so much of this is also about really deeply rooted social norms, structural barriers around how societies exist, care responsibilities, whether it's early childhood or aging or palliative, and there's a full spectrum. There's just so much that needs to happen at a mindset level as well. And then tied to this is a thread around power and what it means to have power with rather than power over, and what new power needs to look like for, systems that we have. And then finally, I think that I've been reading a lot, for example, about degrowth and what it might mean to reframe core concepts of investment around what's risk and what's risk return and what's value. I think it's tied into a more philosophical economic sort of discussion that I think we need to have as a society, because clearly certain things are not working and we're still having the same conversation.
So how do you think we shift those mental models? Because it is absolutely, there are so many myths at play around what finance can and cannot do, around the gender lens, the diversity lens, what's possible within capitalism and what's possible to reinvent. In the collaborations that you have, what ingredients come into play that you find are essential in sort of achieving some of that alignment to move the work forward? Have you seen any patterns?
It does help, speaking about narrative and framing, to have different contextualized versions of what works if you're this type of actor. So for example, we need to have a compendium of, let's say, here are the family offices and here's what they're doing differently and here's how they're investing with a gender lens or a broader diversity lens. This is what it looks like to have also some more transparency around investment thesis and strategy. And there's lots of great examples of where that's happening. I always point, for instance, to the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, which made a commitment in 2020 towards their gender and racial equity strategy. And they report very clearly how that allocation is shifting, what it's going to, how it ties into like which of the impact indicators, et cetera. So I think having clear, transparent, here's what we're doing and how we're doing it is a big sort of lever for change. And then other things in our world, particularly that offer potential opportunities, again, thinking, as I said, about the sea change around disclosure and regulation and what it might mean to not only integrate gender and diversity, but then to like have that flow through, you know, whether it's the wealth advisors, whether it's the investment advisors, the intermediaries, other intermediaries that support. But what does it actually mean to uphold the commitments, you know, that are being made? I think we need to sort of keep having also more investment product, because particularly, let's say, on the public market side, I think we definitely continue to need sort of, you know, more traction when it comes to volumes of capital that's moved as well. But it really, a big thing is having more examples of how it works and creating that space where people can learn from each other about what worked, what hasn't worked.
In your recent experience post-pandemic, have you seen a reinvention of how you convene folks? We've shifted, right, I think, how we're expecting to come together. And have you observed any changes there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely the pandemic, you know, everyone went virtual all over the world. And the positive of that is that you're able to reach a much wider audience and spaces became a lot more inclusive because you didn't have to travel to like New York or, you know, have to worry about visas and that kind of stuff, which very practically sometimes and particularly holds people back who are from the from emerging markets. So that was, I think, a great opening. And in our work, you know, we really focused on making sure that the community had that space to connect with each other virtually. And we hosted a lot more virtual programming. We even ran our entire global summit virtually over 2 weeks in 2021 for two time zones and had over 500 people be able to be there and kept that sort of engagement going, because people obviously also in the pandemic, they wanted to be able to share what was working in terms of how their process was shifting or how their strategy was moving. And so shining a light as well on new investment vehicles or strategies that were coming up and providing that cross-pollinating space, you were able to do that quite well virtually. And then also we really sort of revved up our working group activity around the different themes. The pandemic enabled us to really shine more of a light on the care economy, which I spoke about too, because everyone was viscerally feeling why care was important. you know, we just hosted our last summit in London, and we've paid a lot of intentionality around, hey, this is the first time some people are meeting ever because they're new and have not seen each other, or this is the first time people are seeing each other in a really long time. And I think that balance between what works in person versus what you can do virtually and what types of spaces that you need to create. And our team is a fan of Priya Parker and the art of gathering, and really thinking through, well, why are you creating this space? What is it for? What do you want people to walk away with? So lots of intentionality goes in, whether it's virtual, whether it's in person, for us to really make sure that it's action-oriented, solution-focused, but also like allows people to really show up as their full selves, because I do think that's very important to bring out the tougher things.
Is there anything that stands out for you personally in the past year or so where you thought, how exciting that this has come up and I think it could be scaled, or that it was just successful in a mm-hmm. certain space, but it gave you hope that there was a way forward? I know you're working in a whole bunch of different areas, but just if something stands out.
Yes, I mean, I do think that, and I mentioned the care economy a few times, but I will go there again, because the momentum that we saw from the investment community towards wanting to understand what it meant to, as a gender smart investor, be thinking about the care economy either as part of your thesis or a direct investment strategy, or how to be thinking about having a care lens as part of your wider gender smart investing strategy, was definitely, propelled by what was happening during the pandemic. But people sort of having this mindset around, what does it really mean to build back better, to be resilient, to create workspaces that are aligned with the future of work and, how the world has changed, et cetera. We were able to have that type of conversation, which, and keep that momentum going, right? And so much so that in our working group, we, started at a higher level to sort of level set on where people were at. And by the end of the year, we produced these three primers that focused on, well, what is the care economy? Like, why should investors think about this? And then started the two other briefs that covered, well, what can you do as an investor? And then what can you do if you're a corporate or, other type of actor? So I think that momentum, and even seeing at the summit, for example, in October, just the energy around the topic and people, even an infrastructure investor saying, oh, right, I could be thinking about care in this way. If I'm going to be building a new metro station, right, I need to be thinking with a gender lens. Where are the women? Like, who drops the kids to school? What needs to happen? And this whole sort of follow through. So I think that definitely was something I look back on fondly last year. And we need to keep building on that momentum, right? And I think it goes back to what I said before, like, show the examples, come up with collective principles around analysis and, how we're thinking about this, process metrics, etc. And the more that we build capacity and the bigger compendium of examples that we build, we keep enhancing our sort of collective reservoir of what works, what doesn't, how to do it, what are the blueprints for scale, and where do we need to be, shifting and tweaking.
And to your earlier point, how we define value, right? What is, yes, what is valuable, and who are you benefiting? Who benefits from the change, and time span as well, right? Shifting that sustainability is too expensive, or investing in gender is too expensive, or whatever the excuse is to justify maintaining the status quo. What keeps you going personally in this work?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it too. It's the urgency. There is a lot going on right now, and I'm sure every generation has felt it. But for me, I think this, like I said, I don't want to have to wait another 50 years to feel like we're inching towards progress, right? So what really drives me is, I do think finance is a powerful tool, and how can we use it for social change in a way that can be sustained, right? And this is why I think having a broader gender and diversity lens not only enables investors to be thinking about the opportunities, like, what does it mean to exclude 50% of the population when it comes to talent, when it comes to decision making. It's, you know, it's a smart thing to do. And so helping work with different types of investors and intermediary to support them in their journey, I think is a privilege that I get to be part of every day. And then for me, I think at a personal level as well, I do think that, and we talked about it a little bit in terms of like the social norm shifting, the narrative shifting, the power conversations. I think getting to have those dialogues in an investment context is also part of the mindset shift that we need. And so that always lights me up when we are able to take people there, because it does open up something sort of different in you. And then you can also figure out, okay, well, I may not be quite there for that, like, really transformative stuff, but what can I do today to stop being gender neutral, to being aware, to then being, you know, responsive, and then ultimately be on this pathway to transformative, and also be okay that maybe some people will never get to that full level. But as I said, we need all our efforts to have sustained change. So that's definitely, and maybe finally, like, I think it's working in community. It's all these amazing people in our network, the different members in 2X Global, all the members, like the gender experts, the civil society organizations, all the different actors in the ecosystem that are working at the broader field of gender equality. How can we continue to work together, find those nodes of intersection, think about the leverage points that we can collectively scale up? That's what keeps me going.
I can't let you go without asking you about ESG and the continual conundrum of measurement, impact measurement and transparency and reporting.
I mean, I think that, you know, somewhat particularly in the last year, some of the backlash is also so tied to politics. And it does help to kind of go back to first principle around, you know, what ESG was designed for and what it's about. And I think that this sort of shift towards more transparency, accountability is healthy. And it, of course, helps keep the level of rigor. It's not enough to just say that we are this type of ESG fund or this type of fund without necessarily like having good verifiable data. So it's definitely a move in the right direction. And I think that each of the different actors, you know, has a role to play, right? So right from the asset owners to the asset managers, if it's a more retail product, like we as retail investors could also be demanding, sort of we need to know where our money is going, right? So I think this is part of the balance that is important, you know, to keep striking, and at the same time not to make it so prohibitive that we, you know, I remember being on a conference a few months ago and someone saying how there's just so much data that is requested, but ultimately you want to see the value being created, right? Or the ultimate impact that we're having. So in some ways it's like, yes, we need more rigor, but we also need it not to be onerous. And I don't think there's a magic bullet answer to that per se, but it is a step in the right direction to have more transparency, to have more verifiability so that we can, you know, stand by. And this is where I think things like certification can really help, so that you are able to say like, this is good. And then this is the next level of what better looks like, and, you know, so on and so forth.
You talked about lots of different actors. What role can government play in accelerating some of these changes? Again, broad questions, but you can ground it maybe in gender-based investing.
I mean, I think that particularly if we're thinking about field-level work and ecosystem-level work and systems-level investing, there's absolutely a place for all actors, including government and public policy. And of course, there are very strong links with gender equality, because if the enabling environment in which women entrepreneurs, women fund managers, diverse entrepreneurs are based in isn't as conducive, and that needs to have like policy linkages, or the regulatory environment needs to be you know, more facilitated, we have that disconnect. So I think absolutely. And we, you know, definitely try to bring in the public sector voices where possible. And then if we move one level down to, let's say, the development finance organizations or others that have public money, like having champions or having things like the 2X challenge that has helped galvanize up to, we're on track for $15 billion by 2022, that is, you know, having that community of committed public funders that, you know, are focused on getting money in the hands of women and girls requires that coordination also. So again, coming back to like shared learning, making sure people's voices are at the table, but then having that circle again of accountability. So I think it's absolutely an important sort of actor at the table, creating those connections where you can sort of make sure that the what's happening in the policy realm is also aligned with how investment practices are shifting and what's happening in the disclosure space.
For sure. And I think the role of, you mentioned certification, and I think in some instances, government being in play for more than just collaboration, but actually compliance or establishing frameworks to ground the work is obviously an important part in systematizing the changes.
I think about the Equality Fund out of Canada and the sort of endowment from the government, and just thinking about, you know, they're about to release their intersectional investment guidelines. So again, coming back to that linkage between Canada having a feminist foreign policy and also trying to do that domestically. I keep coming back to this, but I do think that there is really something here about how do we get to that point where, despite our diversity, we are able to, like, you know, speak common language that helps us advance what are collective goals, because we do have big societal challenges that we all face, right? But I think that does require an inward look.
Sana Kapadia is Director of Strategy at 2X Global, a global membership and field-building organization dedicated to unlocking gender-smart capital at scale. She is based in Dubai. This is Design Influence. I'm Isabel Swiderski. Design Influence is an initiative of 725. Since 2007, we've been helping social innovators amplify their impact by designing brands, products, and services, and telling stories that matter so we can change the world together. Find out how we can help support your work at 725.com, SEVEN25.com.